Recently, Kim Hill talked to Dr. Doug Wilson about the benefits of walking, which has been a popular download as well. And Doug said he'd been reading a book by a neuroscientist, Shane O'Mara. It so happened we were chasing Shane to talk to, and there's a lot in his work to talk about. Dr. Shane O'Mara is Professor of Experimental Brain Research at Trinity College Dublin and a former director of the Trinity College Institute of Neuroscience. He's written A Brain for Business, A Brain for Life. He's written Why Torture Doesn't Work, The Neuroscience of Interrogation. But his latest is In Praise of Walking, The New Science of How We Walk and Why It's Good for Us. It's just hit The Guardian's bestseller list. Hello.
Hello, I'm delighted to be on the radio with you.
It's nice to have you on New Zealand radio for the first time, I think.
It is indeed.
I hear you're a dangerous walker. You like to nip across the roads and shun the pedestrianness of crossings.
I am a little like that. Let's say I take measured risks with walking across the road. I don't understand why pedestrians are required to wait for long periods when there's no traffic. And I think we should just go.
A measured approach, that's a nice way of putting it. Was it Nietzsche who said, never trust a thought that you haven't had outdoors? Well, he said something similar. Is it walking per se, or is it outdoor exercise that benefits us so much in ways that you are going to describe?
I actually think it's walking per se, although walking outdoors in nature. And nature can be very roughly defined as just being outdoors with the wind and the rain or the sun on your face augments the effects of walking. So, you know, on a treadmill is fine, but really, you know, to get the full range of benefits, put on your coat if you need it, put on a comfortable pair of shoes, close your front door and march up the road.
I'm going to get into quite a bit of detail from your book. You quote Kierkegaard, who said there's no bad thought I can't walk away from. But somewhere else in the book, you say the evidence supports walking as combating depression, but not anxiety, which is presumably what Kierkegaard was talking about. So is that so? Why on earth would walking help with depression, but not so much anxiety?
I don't think we can give a really good answer to that yet. That's a really, really new finding. Anxiety results from things that may be happening to you. So you may have ruminative thoughts that you find it maybe a little bit hard to escape from, and these may be anxiety provoking. Whereas depression affects a much wider range of things than just the immediate contents of cognition. It affects how you feel, it affects how you interact with others, it affects how you experience pleasure, it affects your levels of motivation. And the evidence on that side is actually, to my mind, pretty impressive, that those who walk a lot are at much lower risk of suffering from major depressive disorder than people who don't.
How hard do you have to walk? Because, of course, not everyone can walk hard. And how often?
We know from smartphone and wearable devices now quite accurately the amount of steps that people take on average per day. And we know that, for example, that the Japanese tend to be the people who walk the most in the world, and very difficult to drive cars in their towns and cities because of the density of population. So people do walk an enormous amount, typically about 5,500 to 6,000 steps a day. Whereas in Saudi Arabia, a very uncrowded country, very hot, people tend not to walk so much. So of the order of maybe 3,000 steps per day. Anything up to maybe 15,000 or 17,000 steps a day is super. Beyond that, you're not going to get any gain, and probably not too much in the way of really great gains from anything above 12,000 or 13,000 steps a day. So my guess is, just looking at the literature, you're talking somewhere in the 5,000 to 10,000 or 12,000 steps a day every day is a reasonable guide.
Okay.
And then there's the issue, of course, of the speed. I think if you want to get a good effect on your heart, what you need is to be doing something around about 5.5, maybe 6 kilometers an hour, and keep that up for 30 minutes or 40 minutes, 5-6 days a week.
Some people have probably just heard that with a degree of dismay. I saw a recent figure in New Zealand. They reckon the average office worker only averages something over 3,000 steps a day. 9,500 is your minimum, yeah?
Well, that's what I would always do. And after we finish the call here, I'm going to go out and do 5,000 to take myself up over the 12,000 mark for today. But, you know, I don't think we should blame the office worker. I think we need to blame the average architect. Give you a simple example. In my office building, to get to the stairs, I have to go through three fire doors. And when I get to the floor my office is on, I also have to use a proximity card to get through the fire door onto the floor. Whereas the elevator, the lift, is just there. So offices and the environments we find ourselves in are not designed to facilitate movement. So you have these other features of the environment that could be designed in, which aren't there.
Tell me, if you wouldn't mind, what walking has done for you and whether you have a point of comparison.
Yeah, that's a really tough question. But let's say the weather is bad or I've just been very busy and I don't get out for a couple of days. I certainly feel very, very sluggish and tired from it. But what I also find is when there are issues that I want to think through, walking for me is very good for kind of problem solving and kind of creative writing and organization of my thoughts. You know, all of those kinds of things I find walking great for.
And people know that feeling, although not everyone. It's also the rhythm of walking that helps. Tell us about theta brainwaves, if you would, please.
Yeah. The first thing to say is the brain is an electrical entity, and you can record electrical activity from the brain with these skull caps that you see, the electroencephalogram or EEG. And if you look very carefully at these recordings, what you see is they come in at different frequencies, and they tend to cluster at different frequencies. And the one that pops up during movement in animals and in humans most consistently is one called theta. And this is a kind of an oscillation, a wah, wah, wah kind of thing that happens about 4 to 8 times a second while you're moving. And it's more or less absent when you're not moving. And the marvelous thing about theta is that it engages electrical activity across the whole of the brain. And it seems to be preferentially present during learning. So there's some important relationship between theta being present and learning and memory happening in the brain. It's almost, you know, here I am, I'm moving, I'm paying attention to the world. I need to know what's going on. And that's the kind of purpose that it serves.
In your book, you say cells that fire together wire together in terms of brain activity. Walking, for example, improves memory. And I don't think we all knew that.
No, we didn't. One of the kind of great discoveries of the last 20 years, I personally feel there should be a Nobel Prize in this, but anyway, that's a different day's discussion, is the discovery that lots of regular exercise that pushes the body causes the release of a molecule in the brain called BDNF, or brain-derived neurotrophic factor. And BDNF is a remarkable molecule. I think the best way to think of it is it's a kind of a fertilizer for brain cells. It keeps them healthy, it keeps them alive, and it keeps them talking to each other. It strengthens the communication between brain cells. And it seems also to be preferentially produced during theta. So, you know, the electrical activity and the kind of molecular activity in the brain are not separate. They kind of relate to each other. Lots of this kind of activity is really good for the heart, obviously, but it's also really, really remarkably good for keeping your brain in tip-top order.
Dr. Shane O'Mara is with us in Praise of Walking, the New Science of How We Walk and Why It's Good for Us. And in layperson's terms, I suppose we think of walking as letting a bit of a breeze blow through a stuffy brain. And in neural terms, that involves the molecules you've talked about. There is science behind the feeling we get, yes?
Yes, absolutely. There's no question about it. It's, you know, this kind of intuition that people have had through the years that walking is good for us, and this is something that we should be doing more of. The science very, very strongly backs up that idea.
A study last year tracked people over 20 years. And what did it discover about people who moved the least
This is a big study, the Wisconsin study, which has been tracking personality change in adults over a very long period of time now. And what they found was that the group who moved the least, walked the least, who took the least amount of exercise, showed a variety of kind of malign changes in personality. They became more disagreeable, for example, in terms of their interactions with others. And I think this is just one of these other findings that kind of backs up the general idea that movement is good for us and sitting around doing nothing or sitting around just watching the TV is bad for us. You park your car on your drive or you leave your bicycle in the shed for 6 months and then you come out and try and move it. It's going to be all seized up. And I think walking is kind of the oil that prevents that happening to us.
The same parts of our brains that are to do with memory and learning and general cognition, you point out, are the same ones badly affected by stress and depression. It helps to know this because it makes sense that if our thinking improves, as it were, stress and depression will lessen.
Will lessen, exactly. And not alone that, but when stress comes along, you'll be better able to tolerate it.
It arrests the decline of the aging brain. You talk about that. And even in late middle age, adopting a walking regime can produce fairly prodigious benefits.
Yes. And it's very, very clear from work. For example, we've conducted work that our Kramer's group in Illinois has conducted and many, many other groups that it's never too late. That once you get out there and start moving, the benefits start to accrue pretty quickly and they can be really quite profound. And if you keep it up for a good long period of time, you start to see the changes become visible in terms of the structure of the brain. You can measure this and you can pick it up in terms of the molecule BDNF that I mentioned. You can find that circulating in much greater amounts in the blood after they've been engaging in regular exercise or regular activity.
Men walk more than women at all ages. Why?
That is not understood. That's a really good question. It seems true in all societies, wherever you look, but we've only known this since the availability of smartphone and wearables data. The data also seem to show that females, on average, wherever you look, sleep a half an hour more per day than males do. And again, we've only come to even realize this is true over the last couple of years because of the presence of wearables. But one thing that is clear is that the difference in the amount of steps that males and females take is reduced the more egalitarian the society that you live in is.
You worry about people. You see, you're not a great fan of the gym, and you worry about people going to the gym and then congratulating themselves afterwards by carbo loading or flopping onto the couch. And yet we are more and more told that even short bursts of exercise help us. And I think we're confused about how steady and regular exercise has to be.
I don't want to be too down on the gym. What I want to do is kind of get people used to the idea of thinking that a burst of activity is not enough. So there's this wonderful concept from evolutionary biology, which humans are especially adapted to, which is persistence hunting. So humans are very good at tracking prey over very long distances and killing the prey and then bringing it back. And we're particularly good at hunting down animals that can't sweat. So there are lots of animals like this. Horses can sweat, humans can, but other animals have to cool down by gulping in air. And then we're very good at killing them at that point and taking them away. And what do we do after we do that? We go home and we eat the animal and we rest. And I think if you go to the gym for an hour and then veg out on the couch afterwards, you're doing exactly what evolution has designed you to do, which is to rest after persistence hunting. And what we really need to do is to look at the balance of activity across the rest of your day, which is that we should be engaged in moderate levels of activity right across the day with the occasional burst of high intensity activity.
You are out and about a lot on foot whenever you can. And I know you've been asked this before. Everyone opines these days that GPS is causing us to lose our navigating abilities, you know, as we outsource our brains to it. New research this past week from our Auckland University of Technology reckons tourists who travel technology-free can suffer withdrawal symptoms akin to giving up smoking or drinking. And their findings also show that if you are a tech-free traveller, you can regain social navigation and information gathering skills when you disconnect. What is your opinion on whether we harm our brains by using too much GPS? Do you have any thoughts on this?
I think GPS has a great role in disambiguating things for us in much the same way as travellers in times past relied on compasses and other methods of getting around in the world. And I can't see that there's any serious data, and I mean serious causal data, showing that people are substituting GPSs and not engaging in any latent learning when they're engaged, when they're looking and navigating on complicated routes. I think that what is actually happening is people are using the GPSs for the first couple of circuits of that journey, and then they gradually stop using it. And I don't know that there's any meaningful evidence tracking people over several decades who've relied exclusively on GPS to get around in the world and nothing else, and showing that there's some deficit in those people's brains. So I won't believe it if anybody says that such data exists.
All right, getting back to walking, thank you for that. What if you just rode a bicycle? What would be the benefit? You know, if we'd substituted cycling for walking throughout the discussion we've just had.
Yeah, so that's a really good question. It's clear that cycling a lot is also very good for you. You're putting the, or you're getting the relevant cardiac strain that's needed to improve heart health. You're getting enhanced respiratory function. I think they just serve different functions at different times. And I'm somebody who does enjoy cycling as well, but I certainly don't do it in anything like the same degree as I do walking. I think you're traveling at speed when you're cycling. So the way you pay attention to your environment is quite different to the way you can attend to the environment when you're walking. Your focus of attention is quite different. It's on the road ahead. You don't tend to engage in kind of lateral attention, looking to the sides, because it's too dangerous. You may hit an obstruction and come off the bike. I just think it taps a different set of things than walking does. We didn't evolve to cycle bikes, but we did evolve to walk, you know, but we can cycle bikes just like we could drive cars. But walking is the kind of evolved form of movement that we have.
In praise of walking, the new science of how we walk and why it's good for us, Dr. Shane O'Mara has been with us. Lovely of you to talk to us as you walk off into the night now, judging by what you said before.
It's not dark here yet, so that's a good thing. We have very long evenings here during the summer.
Robert, by the way, has just flicked me a story from the New Yorker if you want to find it online. It looks interesting. It's called Stepping Out, Living the Fitbit Life by David Sedaris. So Shane's walking off into the distance.